Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. It is back up in recovery day here on the Enterprise Dish. Not so much intentionally, but everything is aligning, including Rick, which makes this a perfect topic for him. How's it going, Ron? How's it going on, Rick? How's it going, Rick?
Well, Brad, well, I've fumbled a few words already. This is my second broadcast of the day, but no, it's doing really good. I've been very busy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think these conditions and the beautiful weather would indicate otherwise, but no, I think I'm busiest I've ever been.
It's in most respects, that's a good thing. I always say busy is better than bored, as long as it's not boring busy work. But yeah. Here we are, kicking things off today, and this is why this is really appropriate. Sort of out of nowhere, actually, Microsoft just casually, just like, oh yeah, we're doing that now, just released this free tool, which allows you to recover files in Windows. Now, there's some pretty big caveats people need to know about this. Number one being it's a store app, so you got to go to the Microsoft Store and download it. It also only works with the latest version and going forward of Windows. So that's Windows 2004, 2004, or the Spring 20 update, or 20H1, whatever you're calling it this week, because Microsoft has like 17 different names for it. It only works with that, and it's command line only. So it's not the most casual user-friendly recovery tool, but it is free. It is out there. It does look decently robust, and it should be good for, I think, the home user if they need to kind of claw anything out that was accidentally deleted.
Yeah, I love seeing these types of tools come into the market. Mm-hmm. I look at VMware Flings, those types of lab tools, you know, and any type of, I don't know if I go so far as to call this a forensic data recovery utility.
Yeah,
maybe
no,
that's
I don't
overselling
think so
it. But another way out of a problem, who doesn't want that, right? Free in the store, maybe is, you know, smart user at home bit, whatever. You know, I you know, especially like you think, oh, Veeam, you're going to go out of business for something like this. No.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's not a back, to be really clear, this
it's
is not
just a recovery tool. That's actually very interesting. It's not a backup tool.
It's not a backup tool. Like, this is for, oh God, I accidentally put something on my desktop. I deleted it and emptied the recycling bin and it's gone. And I want to go grab that file real quick because I just want to get that specific file. Maybe your snapshot or your backup is maybe 12 hours old or 4 hours old and you want to try to get that one specific file. This is not, our environment was taken over by ransomware. We deleted 65 user exchange mailboxes and it's all gone. Like, this is not that tool. This is, I lost a file. Let me go get that one specific.
I could imagine application developers maybe getting onto this.
Yeah.
You know, recovering working sets of data, you know, those types of things. If you have like a traditional Windows app that could benefit from maybe transient data being available back, you know, that type of thing, or something like that, you could make a case there. I think it's cool to have these types of tools.
I saw so too.
Yeah, the tweet. I saw the tweet. Just, I think maybe it was your tweet that I saw, maybe. But it was one of those things like, oh, it's cool, you know. But I think that people need to take recovery seriously, and that becomes an intentional motion on the initial capture. So like a proper backup, a proper replication, a proper storage snapshot. Those types of things pave the way for flexible and complete recovery. So, you know, that's where I kind of put most of my effort. But if I'm not doing anything, then trust me, Brad, I talk to people who do not believe in backup.
Oh.
At all. Oof. No, they're like, I have so many copies and I have so many like cookie crumbs of things, and it's like, okay. I mean, it's weird. It's like having a conversation with somebody who doesn't believe in cloud or doesn't believe in virtualization. Yeah. These people are out there.
Yeah. I mean, so Rick and I briefly talked about this right before this. There's a whole marketplace that I think is going to be disrupted potentially by this tool. If you go to Google right now and say, hey, undelete a file or recover a deleted file, there is a host of applications. Some of them look a little fishy. some of them look a little bit more legit, but this is just a free alternative. It has no UI, which I think is going to be a turnoff for a lot of like the mainstream market. Not to say that Microsoft won't build that feature set on top of it, but as of right now, it's a neat tool. I very much like this, especially because it works with like USB drives and everything else. But do not mistake, this is not a disaster recovery tool. This is, I've screwed up and I'm well past that ship.
Yeah, and I can't imagine it's going to like help everybody out for every situation all the time. You're right. There's going to be limits, right? I could see, for example, like maybe I deleted a giant file to make room for things. things, and now I've taken back some of that space. Well, the giant file may not be recoverable, right? But, you know, if you're in one of these casual disasters, is that a word? You know,
casual disasters.
Yeah,
story of my life, I think, Rick.
there are marketplaces for those, and you know, experts have built processes around that. So, and you know, I could potentially put that in my toolkit if I was in that business. So, yeah, we'll watch it. We'll, you know, I think people might want to at least get familiar with that. This might be something you could answer a test question with on a Microsoft exam down the road. Those types of things.
Yeah. The one minor caveat before we move on to is. The other thing to keep in mind with this tool is if you have a file that has been deleted and you want to recover it, you got to stop writing things to the disk, because if you're effectively potentially overwriting the data that you're eventually going to try to recover.
Yeah, so you're walking into like not always getting out of the problem right there.
Right, because effectively think of it almost like a web page. Like a file is just a link to a place on a disk, and all that when you delete something, all you're doing is deleting that link. That part on the disk is still there until you write new data on top of it, and then that link is completely invalid forever and you're screwed. And so I just don't want to get emails like, Brad, but you said you could use this tool as a backup tool. And it's like, no.
Well, because otherwise it's just a partial map leading to Luke Skywalker. Otherwise it's not complete.
Very timely. I've just finally watched the last of that. I've seen them all now. I've been caught up in my Star Wars nerdology, and I understood that reference. But Rick, the reason, at least I speculate, one of the reasons why you have been so busy is you guys are hot off the heels of your conference, VeeamON, which you guys were streaming and anybody could go and sign up for it. But, you know, let's talk about the announcements, the bigger ones that kind of came out of that event. And let's bring the backup world back into the light. I don't know. I was trying to do a transition there.
Let's bring the backup world up to speed.
Yeah, there we go.
Putting the up and up to speed. That's what we're trying to do. Basically, yeah, we just completed the VeeamON 2020, and it was, you know, for obvious reasons, a virtualized event. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to take in there. One, you know, we wanted to bring the same level of content to the virtual platform. So we really took the same agenda that we were formulating for Plan A, which would have been that in-person event, and we put it into the virtual format. And then the second thing we did is, first of all, made it 2 days, and we had it concurrent timing when it was broadcasted for the major markets, EMEA, Americas, and APJ. Mm-hmm. So it was an incredible, let's just say, production quality to get to that milestone. And from an announcement standpoint, we really focused on some new capabilities, which are around V11 of Veeam Backup and Replication, mm-hmm. as well as new support in our existing products for other things, such, for example, we announced a native restore for Office 365 Teams data with our Veeam Backup for Office 365 product. So like a new recovery technique. Mm-hmm. So new enhancements around the Amazon product and then Amazon backup product, and then new enhancements for our orchestrated DR. And then we're also going to go into the Google Cloud object storage. And then we also showcase two high-speed recovery techniques for databases and SQL servers. So people got to know Veeam from Instant VM Recovery. Mm-hmm. But now we're bringing that same high-speed recovery technique to file shares and SQL databases. So very specific types of recovery. So right now you could instantly restore Amazon and Azure compute VMs. You can instantly restore VMware and Hyper-V VMs. And then now with V11 that we previewed, SQL Server databases as well as NAS file shares. And then lastly, we had a preview of our Continuous Data Protection Engine, CDP. So a lot of technology coming down way from Veeam, and I kind of went fast through those. But, you know, for the Microsoft community, which is where a lot of the readership, listenership, watchership, viewership, subscribership, membership.
This has been just a thesaurus of words.
Yeah, peopleship isn't a word, I don't think. But the community here is very much aligned to that Microsoft community. So I think that Teams Native Restore will be...
Yeah, that was the one that I was going to latch on to.
Yeah, we've had that request a lot because, you know, in fact, you know, Brad and I, preparing for this podcast, we do a lot of Teams chat. Yep. Meetings, files are shared there. I've actually used my own personal operations day to day for much more of my communication to go to Teams within the organization versus Zmail. And I'm pretty sure you and the viewership are doing the same thing, you know? So from a discovery standpoint, this is now part of the discussion that I think we just need to capture it and be able to recover it.
I mean, it's a lot of the challenges too related to Teams backup. I know this from a personal perspective, is not so much the backup products in the world. Microsoft has actually kind of made it difficult for a while to actually back up Teams. Their APIs have not been nearly robust to what they should have been for proper Teams backup. They're slowly making progress. So it's good to see that you guys are on the forefront of helping everybody else back that stuff up, because Teams is not going anywhere, right? That's Microsoft's new, we've been referred to it here on this podcast a little bit as their business OS, because you can effectively try to live inside of it, or at least that's where Microsoft wants it to go. And so you got to start thinking about really properly backing up Teams, because you don't want to lose that historical knowledge, especially like as you people are starting to plan things in it. They're building up products inside of it. And that workflow and that thought process is critical to capture, especially because nobody ever has bugs and has to triage things about workflow.
Indeed. And I think Business OS is a good way to describe it. I mean, I've installed Teams for Linux on one of the home systems, you know, so the experience can go with you on any device. The sharing, and actually, I'll give mad props to Microsoft. The innovation just in the last quarter, everything from the gallery view, the backgrounding. My favorite is actually just the way you can natively record. That's really good. I do that a lot for internal stuff when everybody can't make it. So this is a strategic platform. I mean, the funny thing is it's not as important as Azure, but it kind of is in a way, in the sense of it's quickly becoming that like first class citizen. I don't know what the current market share data is. I'd love to compare collaboration tools. I don't know what to call the category. You know, end of 2019, midpoint 2020, end of 2020. I'd love to see adoption and use and market distribution. But you know what's really interesting is maybe I don't know, but I really haven't seen a new tool come into play for these current conditions, right? So, you know, before I was go to WebEx and Teams. That was my jam. I mean, Zoom was there. Teams was our kind of standard. We had deprecated Skype for Business, occasionally get like a go-to meeting, you know, and those are how I rolled. But now I find myself spending much more on Teams, especially internally, because we had that before. And then I'm seeing not as much WebEx, but I really like WebEx. I'm familiar with it. I've used it for years. And the one thing I guess, kind of close on with Teams is it really depends on how the organization implements it. So not all organizations permit the recording, or not all organizations permit, you know, all of these collab tools have this type of option, right? My pet peeve, at least in the WebEx era, was the beep in and beep out. So what do? You just build your meeting without that. I mean, that was a default, but you can turn it off. And then, you know, knowing how to mute people, the unruly guest, right? Those things are important. But yeah, it's great to see these tools continue to develop. Teams Backup and Restore was the one area for us to go after. It falls in nicely with our Office 365 story. And there's a couple limitations. Like for example, I don't believe we don't back up or provide the restore mechanism for like wikis just currently within Teams. There'll be more upon GA that's fully documented, but you know, because of that plumbing that you mentioned, the API exposure isn't consistent with like say Azure or some of the other solutions. That it's not necessarily hindered us. It's just made us had to go about it very specific and unique. But a lot of interest for that, by far the most requested Office 365 service to tackle.
No, that's surprising. I mean, Microsoft, I'm shooting from the hip here, so nobody correct me if I'm way off, but I believe at the end of around the end of 2019, they were somewhere around like 30-ish million, 30 to 40 million daily active users. And like a month ago, they said, "Hey, we're at 75 million." And so that just explosive amount of growth comes at a cost, and the cost being that Microsoft is probably doing, in my opinion, everything they can, at least they were for a while, just to keep the resources available. I mean, they were turning off funky things to keep Teams populated. For example, one of them being you can include OneDrive or OneDrive, OneNote inside of Teams, a little tab. Well, they had to turn off the ability to edit OneNote inside of Teams because it was sucking up a lot of resources. I mean, that's like the level of growth that they were seeing. And Microsoft has Azure backing this thing. Like, you can imagine how much data has been flowing through there, and just being created in general that now needs to be properly backed up is probably significant.
Yeah, that's a good point because if I think about our customer base, they've gone through these types of changes, demanding more of it as well. But the main thing I think people, watching this podcast should take away is that the data is, again, that it's the gold, it's the oil, it's the diamond, right? It's that digital currency. And even if you don't think you're going to need to restore it, if you're in an e-discovery situation, or it's like you might think, why would I need to do that? Well, that's one reason. And then, of course, then there's the accidental deletion or the casual disasters, those types of things.
Yep, you gotta keep compliance in mind because a lot of people think compliance, okay, we got files on OneDrive, like that's fine, we've got emails, but the Teams conversations are effectively the exact same thing, and you gotta keep that stuff available. And Microsoft doesn't keep it perpetually available in all instances. So you really just gotta make sure that all your bases are covered, and backup and recovery kind of tech ticks that box.
Especially if you think about people working from home now,
Oh yeah.
data capture is very different. I can't guarantee that if people working from home are going to use OneDrive for Business to store their data, they may be maybe using My Documents on their home PCs now. But they'll share it in Teams, right? Depending on how the organization makes Teams accessible to people, Teams can be very accessible. I can walk into any computer on the internet, do two-factor, and interact. And if I do that and create data and share it there, that's in many situations without Teams in the mix, it's outside of control. So at least from a data capture standpoint, there's a need for that.
So you casually mentioned Veeam, I believe version V11. You guys have you talked about when that's shipping or when that's available or?
So we announced it at VeeamON.
Okay.
We'll just say it's the next release.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of timeline, I don't have a specific
Okay.
timeline. I want to be careful not to get any expectations wrong, right, about
Right.
when it'll be available. I know I just had a motivational call with my team today about not quite the bug beta, but once we get, or the bug bounty, but once we get this preview or the first beta, it's like, guys and ladies, we need to really go hit it and find things, right? Get some feedback to R&D, and we're going to ask our vanguards and some smart customers and partners to do the same. So coming soon.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just, I gotta poke. You can't
Yeah,
just
you can
drop
poke.
new versions of your
You can poke.
software, and I gotta ask the questions.
I got shields and force fields and magnetrons.
That's good stuff. If anybody is trying to find out what the underlying message is from this episode, it's you gotta back it up. It doesn't matter what it is or where it is. You need to have a separate copy at some point because one day you'll find out you'll need it, and hopefully you'll have it. And if you don't, well, then you're kind of out of luck.
Especially as data sources change. Teams is one. And then the cloud priorities, and we've had a lot of requests for Google Cloud. So that's the next major cloud, right? I don't want to say we have a full and complete, we're not done by any means in Amazon and Azure, but we have the main things for those two, and then we can go deeper, right? So if you think about the process to go to a cloud, I look at four major things. So I'll take, and this applies both to Amazon and Azure. Taking an image-based backup and being able to restore it to that cloud. So what we call Veeam Cloud Mobility or Direct Restore to Amazon and Azure. And then things like storing backups in the object storage for long-term retention. We have that for both, and that's where Google's going to come in next. And then agentless cloud native backup. So we're doing that in Amazon and Azure, and the Azure product was, I want to say April went available. Azure VMs, and you can get both of those, by the way, free. The community edition will do 10 Azure VMs for free. And then the fourth thing is kind of a special thing, and I've kind of made this up as a cloud competency. Is, VMware has done something really interesting with all the clouds. They've, whether it's VMware Cloud on AWS and the Google VMware Engine and the Azure equivalent of that, supporting that is a really important thing because to us, we have a really big install base on premises. And that is one of the ways that a lot of those types of organizations are going to the cloud. So supporting that is really important too. And the best part about, say, VMware Cloud on AWS is that all of those cloud services are basically low latency, high speed connections to you. So you could have like a VM and vCenter and regular storage, administrative control plane that you're used to on-prem, but then you could go walk right next door and consume S3 at line speed and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a good way to round out the cloud strategy. So that's the way we look at it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, the important thing is that you have a lot of options, and finding the right one for each individual environment is going to be very, very important, because some people should naturally go to Azure. Other people should very much probably go to AWS or Google Cloud. Just kind of depends on the data you're using, where it is, and your price and performance and everything else that you need. But the important thing is that there's a lot of options now, and they're becoming, to your point with VMware, even easier to access and replicate and just kind of fail over to them as needed.
The mobility, the portability aspect is something that everyone should take seriously. I'm not a fan of lock-in. I think that we will get to hearing frequent stories of customers 100% exiting this cloud for that cloud. Those types of stories are going to happen, and it's going to be very similar to like I stopped using XYZ brand of storage and I started using ABC brand of storage, or I stopped using physical machines, I went virtual, or I went from on-prem to the cloud. These hard changes, and it honestly is probably going to be spurred by finally putting the nail in the coffin on some horrible legacy applications. And that's going to be the driver, I think. It's possibly also cloud economics or business reasons. Like if you're in retail, transportation, or grocery, AWS may not be the right, from a business interest standpoint, might not be the right cloud, right? So you're going to see these reasons become more popular over time.
It's interesting. I always say it's interesting times, but I think it's interesting evolution that we are just continuing to see from all the big players, because obviously AWS, Amazon, or AWS is Amazon. AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud have a very vested interest in building out a better infrastructure or a better mousetrap than the other guy. And at the end of the day, you pick the mousetrap, hopefully not only one mousetrap that works for you.
Yeah, I support the three top clouds, AWS, Amazon Web Services, and Amazon. That's the me, myself, and I cloud, yeah. Oh
Oh
boy.
man, it has been
That was a bad joke,
it has
actually.
been an episode. Perfect.
And we do this for a job. That's the best part, friends, so.
The important thing is just to be candid and honest, and that nobody's perfect. Well, Rick, what else is going on in your world? Obviously, you guys wrapped up VeeamON. You're busy. What else is happening up in the Columbus area?
I'm taking some vacation, brother.
Are
I'm
you?
taking 2 weeks off, and we've got a US holiday coming up, so I'm taking that day off and then an additional day. So I've been at Veeam a long time, so I have a very generous allocation of time off. My spring break got kind of trashed, so I had to move that around. But I'm really looking forward to that. I got 2 straight weeks off, so a little bit of chill will be nice. A little bit of biking, enjoying summer, that's
Nice.
important. At Veeam, we are preparing for the major releases, right? So the VeeamON kind of kicks it into gear. We're going to have our betas internally, and the VBO product, the Veeam Backup for Office 365 version 5, is due out in the third quarter. Everything's subject to change, but that's like planned. So we're going to have some releases to work on. We're not quite for the masses ready to start bringing people back to the office. As you can see,
Sure.
the light's turned off. But whenever I have broadcasts and stuff, I got permission to come in, so that's okay. But the thought here is we're going to be ramping back up and working through these conditions. And it's it was really kind of interesting, the way that March and April came along, the amount of transitions that all types of organizations had to do. We're managing that. We're working with it now. And, you know, we got over a big hump early, but we were carrying on and we're growing, which is incredible. We're still hiring people, which is incredible, given current conditions. So it's in many ways business as usual. And you got to keep in mind, Veeam was always a very globally distributed company, very segment diversified, and we always had a lot of people working remote. So the change wasn't as impactful for us as it has been for others, but you know, we're just going to have to manage the next set of changes as they come up.
Yep. You know, that's a good way to look at it, because this won't be the first and it's not going to be the last.
Indeed.
And whether it's hopefully not another pandemic, it could just be, you know, a natural event or whatever, a power outage. Who knows? You kind of just got to be flexible and be prepared, because you really can't control everything that's coming down the pipeline.
Fire, floods, and blood. Who knows? That was a podcast title that I did once with John Nicholson about your best DR story, fire, flood, and blood. So I thought it was kind of...
The best DR story that I have that relates to me is first job out of college, we got an alert that one of our field offices and data centers were offline because they were attached. And I'm not even joking, a squirrel ate through the fiber line.
Wow, that's one hungry squirrel. I mean, I've got stories like that too. I've heard about there was a in Australia. Connectivity is interesting within Australia. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a company in the north of Australia in the energy segment, and you know, they had to connect to the main of Australia, and it's like there's this one line without fail. You know, somebody builds a road.
Yep.
Was digging and it cuts it up, you know. So those types of things can happen, you know. A squirrel, that would be a hard one to find, but at least, you know, the ones I have are human and intervened. And then I've got, you know, this might be a whole nother podcast episode.
I was gonna say, we should probably save some of these stories for like next month, our best DR stories. I think that'll be a good episode. Well, Rick, we are going to end on that note, if you want to call it, or whatever, everybody else. I'm like just stumbling. Everybody else.
We should not do this on Mondays.
No, we really shouldn't. This was a bad move. But to everybody else, stumble your way down to that subscribe button, like, whatever. Do what makes you happy, because we like doing podcasts and we like you here with us. And we'll catch all of you right back here next time.